So, I have. I hope, please God, that we will do a good job in our learning. I haven't been fired yet after this year and any of the topics that we've ever discussed, and I'm hoping that will continue. I put a great deal of thought into this presentation, which will continue next week because it's just too much to handle in one shot, and it's obviously one of great importance and great sensitivity, but nobody's perfect. So I'm sure there's something that can be improved upon, without question. So most people are not shy to share improvements that they think are worthwhile from their local rabbi. So feel welcome afterwards to share, especially if it's friendly, if it's not too argumentative. Okay. So that's going to be our goal. Our goal is going to be to try to examine today the first part having to do with Mahadran buses, which began operating. I'll tell you exactly when they began operating. My file here.
Did it start neutral or Muncie first?
I don't know what happened. There aren't too many scholarly articles about what's going on in Muncie, but there are scholarly articles about what's going on in Israel. October 27th, 2009. The Ministry of Traffic submitted the conclusions of the committee findings on gender-separated public buses, known as Mahadran buses, to the Beit Mishpat Elyon, to the High Court of Justice in Israel. They had begun operating in 1997, and in February of 2010, the High Court ruled that the existing lines could continue to operate as long as the passengers were not forced to sit in separate parts of the bus. So this is a phenomenon that has existed, and it exists not only on private bus lines, but also some of the bus lines that are funded publicly from the government. And according to this, it's permitted, and that's the way it stands. And then there's if you're interested in further details on this, on like the technical aspects of it, there's a fellow, Rabbi Yehuda Warburg, who's a dayan in New Jersey and New York, so he wrote a scholarly an article we'll reference in a minute, in Tradition, but he has the whole background here about the lawsuits and the petitions and whatever. That doesn't interest me so much right now. So, to discuss this issue about a gender segregation on the buses, we need to talk about segregation in general. And that's what I'd like to address first. And to do this, we have to go back to my roots. To my roots in Baltimore, Maryland. So some of you are familiar with the picture in the first source. And that is the late Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, Zichrono Livracha. Some of you are also familiar that the Baltimore Washington International Airport is now the Thurgood Marshall Baltimore Washington International. You didn't know that?
No.
All your trips, you didn't even know
no.
that?
No.
Bizarreness. It's Thurgood Marshall Airport. Why? Because Thurgood Marshall was from Baltimore, Maryland. He grew up and he lived in Baltimore, and there's a legend in the Jewish community. There's a legend that he was at some Shabbos Goy when the Jews used to live down in Roland Park, well before I was born, in the 50s. The Jews lived in this different neighborhood than where they're found today. And apparently, he was a... We should have one or two more.
Sit on the couch in the back there.
Separate, please. Yeah, yeah.
He was a Shabbos Goy. According to the lore, he was actually a Shabbos Goy for somebody in the firm community. I don't remember who, I don't remember how. But Thurgood Marshall was most well known... Don't sit on the couch. We got to. There's a chair, Amy, next to you. Is there one open?
So I think they actually like that. Oh, there's two chairs over here.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, okay. So Thurgood Marshall in the 50s, he argued. How many lawyers do we have in this room? One, two. He argued one of the most famous Supreme Court cases in American history. And that is the Brown versus Board of Ed, in which he argued that separate but equal is not equal. And as we know, famously, he won. And therefore, separate but equal was struck down, and public schools were forced to be integrated, and there's a whole history lesson behind this, and the importance of the civil rights movement. But what was fascinating to me is that much later, in a case in 1985, the same Thurgood Marshall, who challenged separate but equal, pointed out, this is a very profound statement, a sign that says men only looks very different on a bathroom door than on a courthouse door. So that's, I think, the first thing to keep in mind when we have a discussion like this, which is that even people who believe that separate but equal is not equal also believe that sometimes separate but equal is equal. It's not an all or nothing proposition. Even Thurgood Marshall will agree that separate restrooms are equal. So what we're going to be trying to ascertain is not whether or not separation and differentiation is bad, but whether it's appropriate in a particular context. That's the question. Because I think, unless, if we don't agree with this premise, then the rest of this presentation is going to make zero sense. But there is a scholarly article that I came across which is fabulous. Now, I'm not usually, in my spare time, reading the South African Journal on Human Relations, but I did get a reference, and of course, thankfully, I still have access to a lot of scholarly journals through my YU connections. So there is an amazing article called Benign Segregation, a Case of Gender, of the Study of the Practice of Gender Separation in Buses in the Ultra-Orthodox Community in Israel. This was published in a very unusual journal by Alon Harel, who's a law professor in Hebrew University, Hebrew University or Tel Aviv University. He's an Israeli law professor. And he writes a very interesting article about this. And in his article, he makes this point that there's a difference between a differentiation and segregation against someone. Or maybe discrimination and discriminating against someone. We discriminate between things all the time and between people all the time. We do. The restrooms is just one example. Let's say you have women's only basketball league and a men's only basketball league. So we discriminate between men and women. But we say that discrimination is okay for a variety of reasons. But we would say discrimination in a public school is not okay, and according to the American public school system. So the first point is that it's not always about yes or no. It's about what's the situation, what's the scenario, whether it's appropriate in this particular situation, what are the circumstances here. So that's the first thing. The second is partly a sociological issue, and that's what Warburg deals with in this, Rabbi Warburg, I think, I assume, in this article, The Practice of Gender Separation, which you have here in Source 2, Tzigazon, is that, interestingly, until recent decades, a minority in any given culture was essentially coerced into following the majority rule in that culture. If you were, let's say, whatever particular nationality you were in, and then there was a minority there, there was pressure from the overwhelming society to coerce the subset to conform. But in liberal Western culture, now, we don't believe in that. We don't believe in forcing minorities to conform. Part of liberalism, again, good, bad, or otherwise, part of liberalism is understanding that there are multiple viewpoints and there are multiple communities and perspectives. So that's another layer that whether or not we determine that a practice in a particular community is or is not discriminatory in a good way or a bad way is separate from the question whether or not we should can impact their practice in their particular community. What does a liberal viewpoint say about this? So he has two different points to address this issue. And that's the long article here in tradition. Whichever approach one adopts, we can either have the multiculturalist approach, a non-interventionist model, where you attempt to preserve the values of a religious minorities, certain rights, and then the civil republican option, where potentially negative effects of well-intentioned multicultural accommodation would be scrutinized and these practices would be taken from the perspective of the outsider. So this is another question which the Torah also, I think, needs to consider when you talk about minorities. And I think in this context, in the macro context, the Torah says multiculturalism is good. How do I know this? We have 12 tribes So what's the significance of 12 tribes? There are many significant elements of 12 tribes. So one of those elements, according to a Hasidic introduction, it was written a long time ago, probably 150 years ago, that I once found in a book in Hebrew books. So they there is a, I think it was called the Shar HaYichud. I forget. I came across this sefer a long time ago. So he says that the reason there are 12 tribes, not the reason, that one of the aspects of 12 tribes is that there are 12 gates of Yerushalayim. 12 gates, plus a 13th gate for anybody who doesn't know where their tribe is, or they're a convert, or they're not, it's called the Shar HaKolel. They're not particularly affiliated with one particular tribe. And therefore he suggested this introduction to the Siddur. There actually used to be 12 modes of prayer. 12 different nuschos hatfilah. And then there was the 13th called the Shar HaKolel, the nusach, that if you didn't know if you were in Shevet Ruvain or if you were in Shevet Dan, so you practice the general method of prayer. So his argument is there that the Arizal Siddur, he's a Chabadnik, so he says the Arizal Siddur, that's the nusach HaKolel, that's the 13th gate, and since we don't know what tribe we're in, we should all daven nusach Ari. Okay, that's good. But the idea that multiculturalism exists in the Jewish tradition is deeply rooted, and actually, not for today's year, we could take a look at, this goes back again to my natia toward, my tendency toward liking history, if you look at the founding of the American colonies, and the Federalist issues about states versus one unified government, you'll find a lot of interesting things, if you look in Sefer Shoftim, between the different tribes and their different settlements versus a Federalist situation of one unified Shoftim. And how often was it that different tribes, let's say last week we had Shiraz Devorah, well, who went to fight? Well, not everybody went to fight, this tribe and that tribe. So there's a very similar tension. But the idea is that we understand that, yes, there is a role of multiculturalism. There are elu ve'elu divrei Elokim. So there are different approaches. And the fact that you practice one approach doesn't mean I'm going to practice a different approach. And it gets back to what we mentioned when we had the discussion about toleration, that sometimes we see pluralism as beyond toleration. Pluralism, you have an approach and I have an approach. It's different. You know, I daven nusach Sfard, and the shul, we daven nusach Ashkenaz. I'm not going to force them to change. You can't force me, but I'm not going to force them. It's all very good. Right? Okay, there's a Gavai, says it's okay. So, the first layer of understanding, which is brought to bear here in source number 3, in Alon Harel's article, is he says, wait a second, if we look at the second part, he doesn't mention Warburg by name, because Warburg was written later. If you look at the second approach that Warburg mentions, this idea of an interventionist model, where the majority is going to... Is there more sheets on the table? There should be more packets. So we should. Does everybody have?
Yeah,
we should pass them down.
I don't have that one.
Don't worry about the articles. You need the picture with Thurgood Marshall. You can't live without that. You have? Steve, you have? So he points out that, wait a second, even if you were to have this interventionist model, well, how are you going to determine? How is somebody going to determine for a minority what's appropriate, what's discriminatory between, and what's discriminatory against in a particular practice? So you have to look, and that's what he does in his article. He looks at it from a Jewish, from a halachic standpoint, about the roots of segregation in halacha. So the Gemara says in source 3, which he doesn't quote, which I think is an important telling source, the Gemara has a very strange agadata in the Gemara in Yuma, which says that apparently, at some point in Jewish history, the Yetzer Hara, the desire for idolatry, was abolished. It was destroyed. Which we can all well understand now, because nobody really has nobody has this experience, at least I've never had this experience, that people are just like running in droves to find a local idol. It's just, we don't have that. And sometimes, especially, you know, in school when we when we teach our kids about Sefer Shoftim and Sefer Malachim and Sefer Divrei Hayamim, and they're talking about how they're worshipping this God and that God, kids that don't understand what he's talking about. And the Gemara already says, the Gemara has a comment in the end of Sanhedrin, it says that one of the rabbis, he made a comment, he said, oh, Menashe, what an idol worshiper. That guy was such a lowlife. Or I think he said, Menashe, my friend. in a kind of derisive manner. So Menashe came to him in a dream and he said, look, if you were to live when I lived, if you would have had the same culture in which I lived, so you would have picked up the bottoms of your pants and ran before me to worship idols. So you don't understand the culture. So that's the background of this. And then the Gemara says, well, what about the other Yetzer Hara? There are two like paradigmatic challenges that we have in our life. One is intellectual. That's the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, we'll say. And then there's the Yetzer Hara of Taiva, of the animalistic, physical desires that we have that cause us to steal, to eat things that we shouldn't eat, to have illicit relationships, all kinds of things that are related to the physical. These are two different realms. So the Gemara says, the rabbi said, wait a second, why don't we strike while the anvil is hot? This is a good idea. Amru, hold, I'm at the end of the first line. Hold the eis ratzon hu, niboy rachame ayitzre da'avera. Why don't we ask for mercy that God should take away the Yetzer Hara of Avera, of sexual desires, which are so prevalent. So the Gemara says, Bo Rachme, they asked, Ve'imsar biyadayu. They got it. It was given over to them. Omar Luhu, let's see, Chazu, let's look, Di'i katalisule lahahu, Kalya Alma. The rabbi said, wait a second. We have, I don't know if this is literally or symbolically, the Yetzer Hara of desire is in our hand. If we kill him, maybe we'll destroy the world. They said, you know what? Chavshui Tlasa Yome. Let's trap him for 3 days. What happened? Ubo Beyasa Bas Yoma Bechol Eretz Yisrael V'lo Ishtakach. They tried to find an egg in the whole land of Israel. They couldn't find one. No eggs. Why no eggs? Because if there's no desire for the other gender, so that whole realm breaks down. So that means that there were no chickens who were mating. So now we have no eggs. So the rabbi said, wait a second, this is not good. What are we going to eat on Sunday? He said, this is not good. Hey Chinavid, what should we do? Niktalei, we kill them? If we cut off this Yetzer Hara, this drive that's hardwired in people, then Kalya Alma. Niboy Rachme Apalga. You know what we should do? Let's pray half of it should be taken away. It shouldn't be so intense. You know, Freud is a little over the top. So says the Gemara, Palga Barakia Lo Yavi. God doesn't work with halves. There's no such thing. Either you have it or you don't have it. The heavens, they don't work with halves. They don't do that. So the Gemara says, you know what they did? Kachlinu la'enei. They poked out the eyes of the Yetzer Hara. V'shavku, and they let him go. V'ahani, and it helped. D'lo migri bi le'inish bikrevasei. That a person shouldn't be drawn to their siblings, naturally. Normal people. Rahman al-Islam, there are always exceptions to the rule. There are always outliers. But what is this Gemara telling us? I think it's a fascinating Gemara. Now, whether this is taken literally or not, they poked out the eyes of the Yetzer Hara of Arayos, because on the one hand, we can't live without it. We want to be able to fill the world. Procreation, that's part of it. But on the other hand, we understand that living with this Yetzer Hara is a pretty serious business. Now, the one mitigating factor, the Gemara says, is, well, at least incest is something that naturally goes against the grain. It's not something that lends itself. But beyond that, it's something that's it's a very difficult challenge. And that's something that, I mean, we're all aware of the fact that the internet has given us many great tools. Internet enabled us to have this Mar Makomo sheet. But at the same time, a significant minority of any searches on any given day, according to statistics on the web, have to do with pornography. And you're talking in the 20, upper 20s to lower 30% range of all searches. All searches. So the Yetzer Hara of Arayos is out there. I forget exactly how many million pages there are and websites. So the challenge, the Yetzer Hara of Arayos is there. And that's a challenge which we need to consider. So the Shulchan Aruch on Source 4 which will give us one perspective. No, don't start. Where did the... Yeah. Will give us one perspective on gender separation. Shulchan Aruch writes in Evan HaEzer, which are the laws governing marriage and divorce, Tzorach Adam lehisrachik mehanashim ma'od ma'od. A person, a man, has to be very careful to keep a great distance, ma'od ma'od, from women. So why is that? Again, it's because of what we just pointed out, that there is this innate desire that God gave us, which is a good thing, but it's something we have to be careful. Now, this line in Shulchan Aruch, even though it's written for men, is equally true for women. Why? Because the Rambam explains in Source 5, Ko'abo al erva min ha'arayos. Anybody who engages in physical intimacy with any forbidden relationship, derech evorim, o shechibek v'nishek derech taiva v'nehne pekirav basar, hariz alokim min ha'torah. Or he kisses or hugs derech taiva in a manner of affection, v'nehne pekirav basar, and is this there's a close physical relationship, hariz alokim min ha'torah. Shenemar, as it says, v'lo sikravu legalo zerva. Shel kolomar, and the last line, on the first paragraph in the second, and source 5, lo sikravu ledvarim hamevim lidei gilui erva. Says the Rambam, the Torah gives us guidelines to what are healthy relationships and what are unhealthy relationships. And it says, number one, there's an issur to engage in unhealthy relationships. And number two, there is a distance that needs to be created. It's not just, according to the Rambam, the requirement to set a physical separation that I'm not going to kiss somebody else's wife, that's a din d'oraisa. Even if I'm not going to go any further than that. But that itself is an issur d'oraisa.
Is this only married?
So, that's a good question. The Rambam's opinion is that, and this is the opinion of many, that any woman who is a nida is in the category of arayos. So, if this is a topic that we would... that I tackled recently, just obliquely, with the students. So that's why, according to the Rambam, this lav, this issur d'oraisa, applies with any woman who is above the age of, I don't know, 11, 10, 12, depending on where you're talking. Now, there are going to be additional issurim d'rabbanan with women who are not nida, but I'm talking about an issur d'oraisa, a real bona fide prohibition. So this is one prohibition. If we're going to talk about what's the background of whether or not we are, how we feel about gender separation on buses, we need to understand why we separate genders in the first place. So the rationale is because we know that there is an automatic attraction there, and the Torah tells us there are certain things that are unhealthy. So if a woman is in nida, so that already puts her in this category, that there's a potential issur d'oraisa. That's one. And that's why the Rambam goes further in the second paragraph here in Source 5. Ha'osir dover mechukos elo haryu choshet al arayos. If a person does that, then they're suspect for arayos, for these forbidden relationships. Va'osir la'adam likrots biyadav uvaraglov. A person's not allowed to wink with their hands or their feet. Olirmos be'enav. Likrots doesn't mean wink. It means to gesticulate, to make any kind of motions. O lirmos be'enov, or to wink with their eyes. La'achas min ha'arayos. O lischok ima, or to fool around. O lahakal rosh. Va'afilu lahariach b'samim she'olea. Even to smell the perfume. O lahabit b'yofia asr, or to gaze. The word lahabit and the word lehistakel are going to be important here. It means to gaze intently. And then the Rambam talks about these things are not actual issur d'oraisa, they're what we call makas mardus. If we had a bez in here and we saw somebody who was making inappropriate gestures, so then we would take him to the bez, and the bez would give him a good makas mardus. They would give him a good beating. So this is one level, one general level of lehisrachik min ha'arayos.
Would that be in the context of, like, you brought up the issue within the context of that society, that idol worship was a bad thing. In this case, would there be reason to have these types of prohibitions because of what was going on in society?
So I would say two things. One is that this is a prohibition which is not time related. And number two, for those who are familiar, and I'm not so familiar, but I just keep my ear to the door of what goes on in the world. So today, these prohibitions are doubly and triply required. Absolutely. I'll give you an example. The Torah was ahead of the curve on many of the issues that have to do with protecting against potential dangers. We have laws called Hilchos Yichud. So as far as I'm aware now, like my wife is a dentist, so she would never violate Yichud having nothing to do with the Torah. Because it's very well known and very well established that it would be crazy for anyone today, in today's society in 2011, to be alone in a locked room with a patient where no one else could get access. That would be insane. But guess what? The Torah told us that 2,000 years ago, the Isser Yichud. So today, these things I would say even more important, because the dangers of what's going on out there, again, I only keep one ear to the wall, but the things that I'm hearing from different Bati Din and the cases that are coming up with the proliferation of the internet hyping up this Yetzer Hara it certainly obtains today, even perhaps even more so. But this din, this is not time bound. This will exist whenever you are. Ani Hashem Lo Shanisi, this din Torah will never change. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you are. So that's one prohibition, which will keep us mindful about segregation and the rationale. Another prohibition is the Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Shin Pei Ches, based on a pasuk we say in the end of Shema every day. Don't stray away from after your heart and after your eyes. So the Sefer HaChinuch, authored assumably by Rabbi Aaron Alevi in the medieval Spain, although it's not certain. Shalom, this is number 387, is Mitzvah 387. Shalom nasur achar machsheves halev v'ri'iyas ha'inayim. We shouldn't be drawn, we shouldn't stray after the thought of our heart and what we see. Shenem ravelos asur achar levavchem v'achreinechem, asher atem zonim achreihem. What's that? The first one is avodah zarah. Shelo nisyachin machshavos seino lachshov b'deo shem hefach haTorah hadash haTorah benuya olav. Not to think heretical thoughts. Lefisha efshar mitoch kach leminus, that a person could be off the charts. And then four lines from the bottom, the last two words in the line are ukamo kain. Similarly, shelo yirdof ha'adam achare mari einov. A person shouldn't follow their eyes. And that, what does that mean? That's all of the worldly things, that the desires that draw them in. And that's what it says. Achare, and then the last two lines, achare levavchem zuminus, that's heresy. Va'achare nechem zuznus, that's immorality. Inappropriate sexual exploits. Shenamar, who does he quote? Vayomer Shimshon. A whole nother story. Shimshon, what he was involved in? All kinds of loose women. Vayomer Shimshon Aloviv. Osa kachli kihi yashra be'enai. It was his eyes that led him astray. So this is some of the background that doesn't have anything to do with whether you're a man or a woman. It goes both directions. So far, it doesn't matter whether it's a man in question or a woman in question. The prohibition against being involved in an inappropriate relationship goes in both directions. So where are the sources? Are there any sources that actually mandate segregation? So this is one tremendous volume. This is the third edition. It's called The Sanctity of the Synagogue. And again, as I mentioned in the beginning, I am hopeful that this shir will be taken as a discussion and something that's worth a thought. And it's not, God forbid, criticizing anybody, but it's just a reality. The reality is that in the 40s and the 50s, there was a big debate in the rabbinic community about the mechitza. A big debate. Before I came to Chicago, I didn't know that there was a lot of debate around here about this particular issue. I was told, apparently, that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik came to HTC. If he gave anybody smicha, he made them sign that they would never, ever take a shul without a mechitza. And if they did, he was hereby revoking their smicha. Rav Soloveitchik from Boston, his brother, was equally strident about shuls that did not have mechitzas. He wrote in a letter that he was once called by someone. I'm not making this up. And again, this is Rav Soloveitchik from Yeshiva University. It's not some stranger. He says, a young man moved into a suburb of Boston where the only existent synagogue had men and women sitting together. Again, we're not here judging anybody. We're not here. We're just having a halachic discussion. This was the Rav's opinion. A lot of people have other opinions. I'm just pointing out this is his opinion. He asked what he should do on the high holidays Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Until then, on account of the mixed seating, he had not entered the synagogue. But on the Yom HaNoraim, he was very reluctant to stay at home. I answered him that it were better for him to pray at home both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and not cross the threshold of that synagogue. A few days later, he telephoned me again. He had met the man who was to sound the shofar in that synagogue, and this man had warned him that if he did not come to the synagogue, he simply would not hear the shofar at all. And the man would not sound the shofar again privately for his benefit. The young man practically implored me that I grant him permission to enter the edifice at least for a half hour, that he might hear the shofar blast. I hesitated not for a moment, but directed him to remain at home. It would be better not to hear the shofar than to enter a synagogue whose sanctity had been profaned. Now this was in the heat of the battle over mechitza and not mechitza. Everybody in this room has different experiences with this issue, but where is this coming from? So part of it is coming from the sociological issues at the time in terms of where orthodoxy was going. Would it exist even today? But part of it is the halachic issue that mandates separation of the genders. And he has tshuvas here from Moshe Feinstein or Rav Aaron Kotler, but I figured that Rav Soloveitchik is usually a very even-keeled type of person. Once a year ago, we even read one of his letters to one of the non-Orthodox Rabbi Shubau. For those who were here in that year, we spoke about Rabbi Shubau, his friend, the conservative rabbi from Boston, related to mixed pews and how he loved Rabbi Shubau and they were such close friends. But at the same time, this was the din. Where does it come from? So it comes from a Mishnah in Sukkah, on source 6. Mandated segregation, because the Gemara says, Mishalo ra simchas beis ha-shoeva lo ra simcha miyamav. If you didn't see the celebration of the simchas beis and shoeva, you didn't see joy ever in your life. Well, what happened was, after the first night of Sukkot, they went down and they were making a tikkun gadol. Yardu la'ezras nashim, they went down to the Ezras nashim, which is something we're going to talk about next week a little bit more. They made a whole big to-do. They put up giant menorahs, and they had huge fires, and they had people dancing. But what does it mean that they made a big tikkun, a big fixing, a big tumult? So turn the page to source 6. Source 6 number 3. Okay.
Third. Sir.
Whatever. The third number 6. I always tell you, math is not my strong suit. Motzo Yom Tov, my Tikkun Gadol. What was the great fixing that was going on there? Amar Blazar, Ka'osa Sheshaninu, like that we learned. Chaloka Haisa Barishona. Initially, it was smooth. It was undeterred. Vihikifua Gezustura. And they put up little barriers. Gezusturos are like the little barricade things that they have outside the White House that lower and raise up into the floor, you know, stumps like things. Short barriers. Vihitkinua. And they made a takana. Shunashim Yoshvos Milamala. Women sit above. Va'anashim Milamata. And the men should sit below. So they had like a balcony type of thing. They had these stands, and the women sat in the balcony. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis explained. Barishona, initially, Hayunashim mibefnim, va'anashim mibachutz. They had women on the inside, in the base of Mikdash, Ezra's Nashim, closer to the inside. Va'anashim mibachutz, the men were on the outside. Va'ayubam lidei kalasrosh, and it became to kalasrosh, which I guess it translates levity, lightheadedness. Hiskinu, they had an idea. What did they do? Sheyuanoshim yoshvos mibachutz. So we'll put the women on the outside. Va'anoshim mibefnim. We'll put the men on the inside. Va'adayin ayubonli de kalas rosh. There was still levity there. Hiskinu, they made a takana. Sheyuanoshim yoshvos milamala. Va'anoshim milamata. They put the women in the balcony, and the men stayed on the floor. So Gemara says, Hei chiyavid hachi. How could you do this? Va'aksiv, it says in the pasuk, Va'akakol b'chsav mi'ad Hashem alai askil. Everything was given by the hand of God, preordained what the sanctuary should look like. So what does it mean? It's not like Ortor where you can just make an addition if you want to. It's not like you can just expand the facility. It's the house of God. You've got to follow the rules. So he says, don't worry. Amar kra, amar rav, kra, ashkechu v'darshu. They found a biblical reference to this idea, and therefore they said this is part of obviously what Hashem, how Hashem wanted us to build the Beis Hamikdash, as it says, "V'safto ha'aretz." Now I'm on the second little piece here in source 6. "V'safto ha'aretz." The land will misspoke. Hesped, eulogize. Mishpachos levad. Families and families alone. Mishpachos Beis David Levad, the families of Beis David Levad alone. This is a Navi and Zechariah about the future time. V'nesheim Levad, and there are women separately, the wives separately. So Amru, the rabbi said, V'alo Dvarim Kal V'chomer, isn't it obvious? L'uma lo'asid lavo, in the days that will come, she'oskin behesped, they're talking about burying people at a funeral, ve'ein yetzer hara sholik bahem. There isn't this desire that's running around. People aren't looking at each other. It's a very somber occasion. It's almost morbid. Amra Torah, anoshim levad, v'noshim levad. Men are separate and women are separate. Achshav, she'oskin besimcha. In the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, obviously he says, al achas kama v'kama. So this is the source in the Gemara for separate gender shuls. According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's in source 7. Anytime, be'inyan mechitza shitzarach lios v'beis haknesses, be'inyan bein anashim l'anashim v'shir gova. This is written in Tavshin Vav. When is Tavshin Vav? We're now in Tavshin Ayin Beis. So this is over 66 years ago. This was the first of a series of tshuvas Rav Moshe writes, and Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Aaron Kotler and many others reference this same Gemara, that this is the source, that it's a biblical requirement to have a mechitza in a shul. Because the shul is a mikdash ma'at. The Beis HaMikdash is the great house of God, and our shul is the Mikdash Mat. It's a small sanctuary. So just like in the big sanctuary they had, so too in the small sanctuary they had. Now, Rav Moshe points out, in the end of this tshuva, take a look on the second column, Ubalot Sorech Kibbutz Af Mikdash Mutar Shaharei Chana Hispalala Samuch La'ili HaKoin. Rav Moshe points out that doesn't mean then when you have two people in a shul building, you have to have a mechitza between them. She says, wait a minute, Eli and Chana were obviously in close proximity to each other. She came to the Ol, to Davin, and he thought she was drunk, right? And she's the model of prayer. Chana is the model of prayer. This took place in the Mishkan, in the tent, Ol, Nova, Givon, wherever it was. So what's happening? She's there and he sees her. So Moshe points out, yeah, that's because it wasn't a formal gathering. If it's not a formal gathering, so they had men and women passing each other in the Beis HaMikdash and the Ezras Nashim, where there are different people passing each other. So Rav Moshe points out, so too, about 5 lines up from the bottom of the paragraph, second column. Ulufiha gamba batek nesio shalonu shemiskatzim lehispalol shetzorach shiem mechitza. You have to have a mechitza when people get together to daven. If you happen to be walking in the hallways, as Moshe points out, that's not the model that we're looking at. Okay, so this is the first source having to do with segregation. We believe in segregation from a religious standpoint, from a biblical level, in a Beis HaMikdash, and in a sanctuary, in a synagogue. It's more than that, though. Source 8. It expands beyond that. Abaye Dyer Golfi. This is a Gemara in Kiddushin at the end of the Masechta where it discusses Yichud, where it discusses the prohibition against men and women being secluded together. You know, that's why, if you notice, Rabbi Engel, when he came in and he was redecorating, his office has a window in it with shades on it. It's not a secret. He has a shade on it, so there shouldn't be, even if he had the door locked, if he tips the shade, there's no yichud problem. There are all kinds of ways. I'm sure everybody who has a professional context for this has figured out some way to avoid the isser yichud, because otherwise, I think today, it just invites a lawsuit. We live in a society today where it just cannot exist. Anyway, so the Gemara there says, Abaye, he used to set up golfi. He used to set up earthenware jugs. Rava Dyer Kana, he used to set up reeds. Omar Avin Sakva Deshasa Rigla. The worst part of the year are the holidays. So what's the Gemara telling you? It doesn't tell you exactly what he was setting up these reeds for. So Rashi tells you here in the Rashi script in source 8. Makom, what are golfi? Makom kavutzas anoshim v'noshim, a gathering of men and women, o l'drasha, or for a lecture, learning, o l'chupa, or for a wedding, hayim masader kankanim shalcheres harbe beinayim. He used to arrange earthenware jugs between them. She'im yavo ze itzol ze, yekashkishu v'yishma kol. If somebody would try to break into the other side, everybody would hear that the barrels, that these earthenware jugs were moving around. And that's similar to what Rava did. He used to set up lines of kanim. Same thing. So if anybody would kind of trespass on the other territory, so everybody would hear it. And what does it mean? Sakva deshata rigla, riua shol yumos hashana, leyichud ula avera. The worst part of the days of the year for yichud and for avera are yumos haregel, are the days of the holidays. Sheyesh kavutzas anoshim v'noshim, when there are large groups of men and women, l'shmo adrasha, v'nosim v'nosim zem ze. And they become very involved with each other. So, we see from this Gemara that it's not just in a shul where you have a sanctuary that we have a mechitza. In the times of the Talmud, they even set up mechitzas for weddings and for drushas. So there's a discussion, the poskim, is this descriptive or prescriptive? Which is a good question, and there's different practices, different opinions in the poskim, but this is a source for segregation in other contexts beyond the synagogue. And the Rambam has a strong formulation, Hilchos Yom Tov, Chayovin in 9, Chayovin Bezdin Lahamid Shotrim Beregolim. The Bezdin, the rabbinical court, is supposed to set up officers during the holidays, Shu Mesavin Umechapsin Begagos Ubepardesim, that they should go checking around in the public parks and in the orchards. And again, this may sound crazy to you, but it's not so crazy, and we have our own form of this in our own community in different ways at different times of the year, in different holidays when we celebrate Torah in the evening and we want to make sure that the youth of our community are safe and etc. Okay, so as much as it sounds when you hear this, you're like, wow, this is crazy. The answer is, it's not so crazy, and I know that maybe even some people in this room have been walking the parks at different hours of the night and just being extra cautious about what's going on, and we know this is a reality, so it hasn't changed in the last 800 years. Kadesh shelo yiskabtu lecho v'lishtos sham anashim v'nashim v'yovo lidei avera, that it shouldn't become an environment which is inappropriate. And again, same thing, we know this is going on today. I don't keep both ears to the wall, but I am in constantly in an environment of 16-year-old, 15-year-old, 18-year-old boys and girls, and these things are out there. So now, it does not mean, the Rambam is not saying that there's never a time and a place for men and women to meet. Even, it's actually interesting to me, if you think about it, it's using the same terminology as the Gemara in Tanis, where the Gemara says that there were two holidays, Tu B'Shvat and Tum B'Av and Yom Kippur, that the women would go out to these pardesim, to the orchards, and they would meet. They would meet guys. And they would have all these get-togethers. They would say, oh, what are you up to? It was like a whole Shidduch festival on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, they had a Shidduch festival. I was recently at a shivaus. I don't want to, it doesn't matter who it was, because you never know if they want to know, but on where they said, on Kol Nidre night, the couple met in the hallway, on the Lil Kol Nidre. So, there's appropriate time and place for everything. The Rambam is concerned that when you have Yom Tovim, when there are large groups of guys and girls, men and women hanging out, so, and it gets a little bit loose, so we all know that this is not a healthy environment. On the other side, the Rambam would not say that Gemara is not true, that there isn't an appropriate time and place for men and women to be getting together. And this is part of the whole discussion about mixed seating at weddings versus separate seating at weddings, and maybe there's a difference between the couples and the single people, because we want to encourage the single people to meet each other, etc., v'chule, v'chule. So there's a lot of flexibility here, there's a lot of different approaches, but I think it's important to realize that it's not just made up. It's not like some guy sat down one day and was like, all right, We're going to come up with the chumrah of the day, and we're going to have separate seating at and fill in the blank. There are sources that discuss this. Another discussion, which we're not going to have, I'll point your in the direction here of the bottom right, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, when he was here in Or Torah last year, those who recall, 2 years ago, was not a big proponent of co-education. But when he was asked a couple of years ago of Rav Soloveitchik's opinion, I like this line, so I gave it to you, on the subject of Rav Joseph B. Soloveitchik's view of high school co-education, Rav Lichtenstein said, "It would be foolish of me to discuss its permissibility." So I will follow in the footsteps of my great teacher. Rav Aaron said it's foolish to talk about it. There's no point to talk about it. We know there are differences of opinion on this matter. We know that there are differences in terms of communities, in terms of students, in terms of halachic approaches on this, Rav Avadya on one hand, Rav Soloveitchik on the other hand, a lot of different approaches. But the point is, this is an issue of sensitivity. When a community is confronted with the issue of having co-education or no education at all because of financial constraints, the fiscal viability of the sponsoring community warrants careful consideration. The decision to have separate gender education should not disenfranchise one or the other of the genders, and that there is a lot of good work being done within the co-educational schools and a lot of good students coming out of them, and I appreciate and admire all that's being done by the mechanchim and administration in those schools. So, it's a nuanced picture. It's not one way, it's not my way or the highway, it's not one way only, but it's a sensitivity. It's part of our worldview of something that we need to be conscious of. And again, what's interesting about all of this is that it has nothing to do with your man or a woman. It's equal in both directions. The segregation of the men and the women, it's completely balanced at this point in the discussion. There's absolutely nothing that indicates it has something to do with women or more than men or men more than women. So now, Rav Moshe's tshuva about sitting on a subway. Be'inyan halicha b'subway, uber, what does that say in source 10?
Buses.
Buses! Beis, aleph, samach, ayin, samach, buses! Rav Moshe's Yiddishized English, it doesn't get any better than that. This was written in Yud, Menachem of Tuf, Shin, Chaf, so that's 5720, we're now at 5772, so that's 52 years ago. I'll come upon him. So Moshe points out from a legal standpoint. Now, when we talk about our question, segregated busing based on all this, what would we say? Maybe yes, maybe no. I could hear it in both directions, depending on how you take this Rama, depending on your context, depending on your society, depending on what the circumstances are. Moshe says, Me'ikratin Ladina Benoshim Acheros, with other women. Now, because parenthetically he says, Af Be'eshesish Venidos Venachrios Leika Iser Shalo Bederech Taiva Lekuli Alma. There's a rule in the National Football League. Even though it's the off season, we have to try to mechazik ourselves, wait till next season. There's a rule, it's called passing interference. Right? We all know there's such a thing called passing interference, correct? After the wide receiver passes first the 5 yards, the first 5 yards you can do whatever you want, as long as you don't hold him. After 5 yards, there are two potential infractions. One is illegal contact, kayadua, and then there's passing interference. But there's a mitigating factor in both of those. It's called incidental contact. When you have a jump ball, essentially, correct? When you're in the back of the end zone, you have the 6'6" wide receiver, and you have the 6'4" defensive back, and they're both jumping for the ball at the same time. And it happens to be that they're bumping into each other. So will the ref throw a flag on that play? No, he won't. He won't. Because that's called incidental contact. Incidental contact. He's looking toward the quarterback. If his face is not toward the quarterback, you all know that that's not allowed. But assuming that they're both looking at the ball, if it's a jump ball, it's called incidental contact. So that's Rav Moshe. He probably didn't think about this when he wrote this tshuva, but what he meant was that what's the contact with the woman or the man, if you're the woman on the subway next to you, it's incidental contact. It's not b'derech hiba. There's no affection there at all. I'm not kissing the person next to me on the subway. I'm not hugging them. It's an incidental contact. I'm on the one train or the red line. I've taken the red line and the Skokie Swift. So it's after a Cubs game. So you have hundreds of people packed in there. Hundreds of people packed in there. So Rav Moshe says, even if it's Anita, even if it's a non-Jewish woman, it doesn't matter. Why? Because Lo shayach lochos milaleches b'subway u'b'buses b'shas halichal avoda shedechukim u'dechufim anoshim v'noshim, that men and women are crammed in there in the subway car.
Why?
Av shalo yuchal lizor b'negiu d'chiv v'noshim, even though it's unavoidable. You're not going to choose who gets onto the subway next to you. The same thing, by the way, on the plane. You like it or not, they're sitting next to you. You got a long ride. It doesn't matter. And then there's always the jockeying for the armrest, right? Who's on the front half of the armrest, who's on the back. Da'anegiyah below miskave, an incidental contact. Machmas she'ief shelo lizoyer, ein zed derech taiva v'chiba. There's no affection in that. And therefore, so then Rav Moshe talks about one's own wife, it's more complicated when she's in either because we have added stringency there. But anyway, he writes in the second column, this is a long chew, I just gave you two pieces. Leka iser mehai taima gam leishev esel isha kishaleka makom acher. You could also sit next to the woman on the bus or on the subway or on the plane when there's no other place. De gam kein ein ze derech taiva v'chiba. There's no affection in that interaction. So Rav Moshe is pointing out that Me'ikar Adin, it's mutter to go on a mixed gender bus. So on the one hand, we have sources that indicate that there is a place in Jewish tradition for segregation in many different venues. On the other hand, we have Rav Moshe's tshuva that tells us that it's permitted. What's ideal? What's lechatchila? Hard to say. Hard to say what's lechatchila. It's certainly not out of the realm of possibility to introduce the idea of segregated busing. By the way,
how do you distinguish that from
davening? What's that? Which point?
In other words, you say on a bus or a subway is not there a
chiba when
davening is true on Shabbos.
Right. So in the case of davening,
the distinction here is not the same.
Right. So in the case of davening, there are many more factors at play. Rav Soloveitchik has, and others do as well, that the mingling has something to do which he believes is contrary to the experience of tefillah specifically, which is why he thinks the din d'oraisa of mandating segregation is in a Beis HaMikdash or in a Beis HaKnesses. Because that's specifically oriented to tefillah. He speaks about how the concept of family pews is in contradistinction to the Jewish spirit of prayer. Prayer means communion with the master of the world and therefore withdrawal from all and everything. During prayer, man must feel alone, removed, and isolated. He must then regard the Creator as an only friend from whom alone he can hope for support and consolation. So tefillah and avod in the mikdash, that's the din d'oraisa. The Gemara then extended it to other areas beyond tefillah in terms of the concern about intermingling. But Moshe says, but if you go back to the Iker source that we started with, the Rambam, about the prohibition of actual physical interaction, the physical interaction is only prohibited if there is some affection involved. If it's completely incidental, so then it's mutter. So therefore, there's no requirement based on the Lav, there's no requirement based on the model of Bisa Mikdash, and then it's up to the discretion of different people how they're going to. So he writes later in the Tshuva, he says, obviously, if a person has a heightened sense of arousal, and they know that this is going to interest them and the person sitting next to them, so he says, absolutely, they should not ride that bus, they shouldn't put themselves in that circumstance. But at this point, everything is, I would say, gender neutral. What I want to do now is actually hold it here. We're going to continue next week with the last piece to distinguish on this point between the genders. For those who like men are from Mars, women are from Venus, I just put a little piece on it just because how can we talk about this without that. I gave you the article here, which we referenced once in the past in a shiur a long time ago, but I didn't give you the whole article last time from Dr. Lamb about tznius, because some of this is going to relate to tznius. And then we're going to talk about the issue about the women being in the back of the bus. Because so far, even if you want to have segregated buses, it doesn't mean the women have to be in the back of the bus. Maybe women should be in the side of the bus. Maybe they should be in the front of the bus. Maybe they should be, I don't know, on the top tier, on the bottom tier. So far, we've just talked about the fact that segregation has a place. And right now, I don't think you could tell me from a Torah standpoint, it's not segregation against anyone. It's segregation between, because we have a concern on both directions about inappropriate relationships. So far, nobody has walked out offended. We have succeeded in part one. We will, please God, continue with part two at our own peril. Okay? Right. Have a great day. Yashar Koyach. No, you can keep the handouts. I'll have more next week. If anybody didn't get Dr. Lamb's article on tznius, it's a very important article.